In these lessons, when I refer to consecrated oil or consecrated water, I want to describe to you how it is consecrated. You have rose oil, or you have some special water you're consecrating, or anything else. You hold it in your left hand, put it over the monadic heart center, which is at the center of your chest, halfway between your solar plexus and your Adam's apple, and you place your right hand over that. You're holding this against your chest with your palms open, your right hand over this. You close your eyes and visualizing a brilliant golden blessing, you intone, "Om." And if you know how to create the heart chakra tone, you do it that way. Om. And with this visualization, with this action, you consecrate and imprint and make sacred and holy and give a very special purpose to the substance that you're working with. So when we speak of consecrated anything, this is how you do the consecrating. Now, these selections are from instructions given many years ago, and they cover a lot of important information. First, you have to understand that what we have given you, the two stones we have given you, are very special. The gemathiae are special so-called magical stones that are inscribed with magical characters and so on in the case of human magic, or that have been inscribed by nature, by the divine will, with certain signs that cause them to be very powerful. Why are they powerful? Because in the mineral kingdom, all that manifests in form concentrates to some extent the iliaster, the rigpa, the divine nectar light that all reality is substanding in. And the more light something concentrates, the more intelligence we say it has, the more consciousness it has. All things are conscious because all things are made of consciousness. All things are, as the Tibetans say, made of mind. But the highest consciousness, the highest intelligence in the mineral kingdom, which are made of the elemental we know as Arcades, are the special stones that are crystals. And these are the ones that are formed in the matrix of the earth, in the matrix of basaltic and other kinds of layers, granitic layers of magma and earth crust, and that they cool and that they grow as crystals in these places that cool down for millions of years. The stones that we have given you are very special. One is from high up on Mount Whitney. It was washed out by the winter storms this winter, freshly. The mineral that you have has never seen a human being. There were no human beings existent when this mineral first was brought together. It has lain hidden, and it has been born by nature in the violence of the storms and the snows and so on. And that was gathered for you, specifically for you. And the other mineral is taken from the veins that form in the special kind of rock that forms in Pacific Grove on the Monterey Peninsula. And these crystals, which have a roughly rectangular shape and are darker, they were finally released from their matrix just this winter by the winter tempests and the winter storms, and they were gathered in a sacred way specifically for you. And so these minerals have, for the first time ever, are introduced to the human being through you. Because as you get to know a mineral, as you get to work with a mineral, as you hold it over your heart, as you hold it in your hands, as you keep it close to you and communicate with it in the way that matter communicates with matter, you are not, it's not just a matter of you getting to know the consciousness of the crystal. It's a matter of the crystal getting to know your consciousness. It's a mutual alignment and attunement that goes on between you, because the mineral is consciousness, just as you are consciousness. And the kind of consciousness that is held by the Arcades is very different than the kind of consciousness we have. It is not weaker. It is not dumber. It is very, very wise. It is very much closer to paradise. It is much closer to the mind of the divine. And by respecting and by valuing and by ascribing worth-ship, which is where we get the Anglo-Saxon word worship from, to these minerals, as you would to very special teachers. By doing this, you expand and awaken inside of yourself the Arcades consciousness, which is the mineral consciousness. Now, let me explain. The Arcades is a consciousness that especially has to do with minerals. It is not the same thing as Earth. The elemental of Earth, which we call Admishural, is a separate issue. The elemental, not the elemental, but the element of the Earth element, the basic elemental quality of the Earth element, is in a very high proportion in the stone from Pacific Grove, which is the dark stone, along with the elemental basis for water, which I'm calling Hudor from the Greek word, but there are other names for it. And so there is Admishural and Hudor in a very large quantity in of that consciousness belongs to that stone in the Arcades mode. From the stone from Mount Whitney, there is the elemental essence of fire and of water. And when we speak, fire and air, and when we speak of fire and air, we're speaking not of the air that we perceive and the fire that we perceive, but of that modality of existence. I do not say manifestation, but existence that underlies and is reflected in these things as we see them with our eyes and as we experience them. And the modalities contain their elemental essences, the Achna for the fire, and the Iliades for the air. And so by working with the Arcades, which contains within it these four modalities through these two minerals, these two stones, you're not only making a communication with the Arcades itself, which is the highest form of consciousness that occurs throughout the Earth's crust, but you are making a communication with the basic elements and the essences of the basic elements of the four modalities of existence. This lays a foundation for communication with the elements then of earth, air, fire, and water in a very different way than we communicate through our skin. As they live in the spirit of each stone. Now, furthermore, each of the minerals that you have, each stone, communicates not only with its own species as part of it and is in direct communication with all these species, but with all species of stone through the granitic matrix or womb out of which it came, and the granitic matrix comes out of the basaltic matrix. And so in this way, in communication with these stones, you are also in communication with the basic, what has been called the spiritus mundi, and I call the spirita mundi, because it's actually a feminine, Gaia, earth. Now, it is an excellent practice to keep these stones in a pouch directly over your heart and just wear them there all the time. Take them off for taking a shower or things like this if you wish, but wear them at all times over the heart, not over the solar plexus, not a good idea over the solar plexus, not too high over the throat, but directly over the heart. When Tess began this practice last week, within one night she was having really important dreams of stones and of minerals, and the communication comes through The energy of your heart center, the communication comes in a very direct way, not in words, not even in images, not in anything else, but through direct light. Most positively that way. Another thing to do is to hold them in your left hand and hold them in your right hand. Because through your right hand, you are able to imprint and exchange certain kinds of intelligence, and through your left hand, you're able to sense and pick up and become sensitive to and receive other kinds of intelligence. So holding them in the hands is very important. Touching them, sleep with them by your head, close to your head when you sleep at night. Put them down close to your head in your bed. All this will add to the power of the communication that you begin to develop with these stones. Now, in addition to working with the communication with the Gemathae, you must use the consecrated rose oil each morning on the crown, the ajna, the throat, nape of the neck, heart, solar plexus, the pulses, which can either be here or here on each arm, and on the soles of the feet. The method of applying it, the best method to apply it, is to make a cross that starts from up and goes down, and then starts from left and goes right. Now, the reason for this communication you're making with rose oil is not only because of the benefits of rose oil in terms of the basic purifications you're going through and the protection it has from irritation and so on, but because the rose oil communicates with very high spiritual levels, and it's good to have a little and put it on your hand and maybe touch your forehead and smell it from time to time during the day. It'll help keep your consciousness focused on your highest spiritual understanding. And finally, it's very important to do the higher triad meditation each morning for about 5 minutes after using the attunement tape, because the attunement tape will help you to get started much faster and more effectively in higher triad meditation. Why is higher triad meditation important? Because through higher triad meditation, you come into communication with the field of Rigpa, of the Ein Sof Aur, of the limitless light, the limitless consciousness that we see looking from our position back into the profundity of the of creation and creative manifestation, looking through the world of form back into the higher and the subtle worlds. We see as a great veil of light. It's a great medium of light, or a great matrix of light out of which all things are formed. We call that the iliaster, and there are many different kinds of iliasters. Or the astrum. If one wishes to come from the other direction, there are many details of how one can describe the unfolding of all the elements that finally lead to the kind of position that we're in. But looking back at it, we see basically what we call the iliaster, and that is what we get in contact with through higher triad meditation. It's in fact what's called the iliaster quartus. And when you are able to evoke this holy white light, which comes in soft clouds and fills your consciousness, when you're able to evoke it easily and readily, then you will be able to work with it and use it. And that is exactly the medium that is used for doing what's called magic. It's the medium that is used with sound and with the manifestational word Aum, and in other ways, for creating for the work of creation. The elements you must have in order to create are the iliaster and your own will and your own imagination. And that sounds like not very much, but believe me, very few people have ever achieved this on the earth. During the time of your preparation for the vigil, you will find 5 other special stones. They'll come to you. They may be stones that already exist in your home. You may come upon them as you're walking. They may come to you through another person, or whatever, however it is. But between now and the vigil, you will gather 5 other stones. And the best mode is to gather them by inspiration as they're brought to you or come to you. Because as you tune into the 2 that you have, The five others will be brought and gathered. Don't just go and buy stones. We want natural stones, except for one stone. One stone is all right to buy, and that is a clear quartz with a point. And this is a clear quartz that you must, when you get it, that you must put into salty water and wash it in that way and let it be in salty water for a little while and wash it off and impress it to your heart. And here's how you impress a mineral to your heart. You hold your left hand, put the mineral over the heart, and the right hand over the left hand. And then you you bow your head and you allow yourself to get as close as you can to visualizing the Iliaster, pure consciousness. Then you take it away. And that one mineral you need to have is that clear quartz that has a point that can be, that has an up and it has a down. Points go up. But you will need to gather five stones, including that one, and that one may be purchased. The others, it's better for them to be natural stones. And it's best for them to be crystalline as far as it's possible. They can be crystalline conglomerates or they can be actual crystals. Another kind of stone that's very good instead of buying a clear quartz is to find a milky quartz. You can find milky quartz. They're not valued by quartz collectors, but they're actually very powerful quartzes, and they're found even in gravel and things like that, and they're conglomerates and all kinds of crystals. The time of the full moon, the final thing to say is at the time of the full moon on Thursday, April 16th, next Thursday, you should meditate with the face of the Master Jesus using the technique for the visualization of the Master that is on the information that I've given you in the past, which basically means that as you approach the time of the full moon, you visualize the face of the Master. And there's a certain procedure for that I've given you an outline on. Very important to draw as close as you can to that image. In this excerpt, I was speaking to people during a time when Wesak, or rather when the Easter Passover moon fell on a Thursday night. Of course, it could fall on any night depending upon the year. But you must do your vigil on that night of the full moon, or the night before, the night immediately after, in order to have the benefits and the protection for this work. Now, I want to go over some of the things. If you look at the order of the vigil rites, you'll find that when you are ready to go ahead and do the work and you have your sacred place and you're in your position, if you're on the earth or on the ground, or if you're on a carpet in a room or a cabin, you hold the Gamathei in your left hand over your heart, you breathe onto your quartz a sacred mumia. A mumia is a special kind of breath that you make. There are two kind of breaths that you use magically. One is like that. It's a warm, moist breath. That's called a mumia, and that leaves an impression and actually a part of yourself onto another bit of matter. The other kind of breath is a cool breath like that you blow through your lips, and that is done to sterilize things and for other purposes. It's done with the visualization of violet. But you're going to bring a warm sacred mumia onto your quartz, and then you're going to place it pointing upward in the earth or wherever the center of your circle is going to be. And your circle is not a circle. It's really the elliptical shape of your auric egg. The egg shape is the shape of your entire aura, which reaches out about two arm spans from you in both directions. And what you're going to draw on the carpet or with your finger or in the ground, in the earth with your finger, is the general outline of that. You're going to put this quartz, this clear quartz, to mark the center of this place, and then with your left forefinger at the center, you're going to be down on your knees and you're going to face north with your right hand extended out to the east so that you are two hand lengths out from that center, and you're going to start drawing with your
right forefinger, once you have breathed mumia onto your right forefinger, again, you're going to start drawing and tracing a circle, which is actually an ellipse, in the earth or upon the carpet, beginning from this eastern position, moving backwards and crawling back and around like a big compass until you've gone all the way around and returned your position and made this circle. It'll have a diameter of about 7 feet when you're done. That's the circle in which you do this work. And when you're finished, you stand up and you face east, and this will be the place that you work. This is the first thing you do in the order. And we call it your auric sphere. You think of it not just as the circle, but as the sphere, or actually the egg-shaped sphere that goes all around you. And in that area is where you're doing your work. And then you pour in some consecrated water, water which you've consecrated in the way that I have described. And you half fill a silver goblet, which you must have. And you can get these things at silver-plated goblets. You can get it at pawn shops and really cheaply at you know, places like some of the less expensive stores and things. You shouldn't have to pay more than $10 for something like this. But you need it. It needs to be silver and silver-plated, because you're going to use that for this special work, and you will use it for other work later. And you breathe mumia upon the water, and then you intone, as I have explained, an exorcistic statement. We expel all beings unfit to witness these sacred rites from this entire area, by which you mean the several square miles around you. And then you take a large sip of this consecrated water, and you are facing east, and you spew it out. Like that. Spew it out. And a kind of growl. Like that. Very powerful. And then beginning where you are at the east, you circumambulate. That means you walk around this center 3 times. And you do this clockwise, dipping your right forefinger into the goblet and sprinkling water into the air outward away from the circle as you walk. And you intone. In the name of Jesus Christ Melchizedek, we consecrate and sanctify this ground for sacred work. Now, when you do sacred work, you don't talk. You sing, or you intone. And this is how you speak with angels, too. And this is how you speak with elementals. Now, you recite this once on each of your circumambulations. And when you're finished, you pour any remaining water onto the central stones. And then you place the other 4 stones in the 4 directions where you think they ought to go. Now, the central stones are first the quartz, and then the 2 gemathiae, or gemathiae, that you have placed at the center, leaning against that quartz. And whenever you leave the circle from now on, you must take the gemathiae, put them in a pouch around your neck, or hold them, and till you come back into the circle, then replace them at that point. Now, at this time, you can bring into the circle all the things you need to do this work. Now, one thing I will say, the work with the mirror is very difficult to do outdoors. You may want to go indoors to do the work with the mirror. It's best to work with a large mirror. The small mirror, the small handheld mirror, is very, very difficult to do this work with. So if you can be by a bathroom or a bedroom or someplace that has a large mirror, you will get much better results, especially if you can sit and not be disturbed by having wind blowing candles and things like that. So there is actually a very good reason why on many of the outdoor vigils people have brought tents, or they have brought various kinds of trailers and things, and they go inside for those things and also for the dream work that comes later. Now, if you read very carefully the directions for all the things that you do in the vigil and the order of the operations and what the operations are, I think you will find everything is somewhat self-explanatory. I don't need to go through all of this, but once you have created the circle, this is where you will stay, except if you have to go to the bathroom or if you have to do special kinds of work outside of the circle. And that may involve, as I say, the work with the mirror, and it may involve the work with the dreaming as well. And Then you vest in a white robe. And you should always do white robe work naked under the white robe, completely naked. In fact, being completely naked is the best way to do this kind of microcosmic work. And then you bring in the great light into your circle and you begin your work and your operation. Whenever you light or relight a candle, you intone, "Come thou great light." And you light, if you're lighting other candles, you light it from one basic candle that you always have your sacred fire from. One of the ways that the French do, the French Masons taught me about candles, as they keep getting burning down really low, and you don't extinguish it, you light another candle, and then you plump the new candle right on top of the wet wax of the stump of the old candle, and they will fuse together, and your light will continue to go. That's the way they handle their bougie. So at this point, you will now stand at the center, and you will begin the operations and the operational work, and you will stand in the orant position, which is holding the right and left palms up about a little higher than shoulder level, in a position where the arms are out and the hands are up. And these positions are demonstrated for you in certain things later on. They'll become more important as you do rituals and liturgies. Have with you a tape recorder or something for you to quickly record things you see and observe. You don't have to give great detailed descriptions, because later on when you hear the tape, just a few key words will help you remember what you saw or sensed or thought or smelled or whatever. But it's very, very important to take observations as you start going through the special work, which involves the scraying in the air with lunar water and the scraying in the candle flame with fire and so on, and the inquiring of the Arcades, etc. This is all very important and very special, and it will help you to gain the knowledge you need in order to outline the microcosmic tools and to understand who and what you in your monadic journey have been. Each of us is a holon of holons, a collection of souls, a greater conglomeration of lesser souls. And we have a certain path we've taken through the mineral kingdom, and we've taken through the vegetable kingdom, and through the animal kingdom, and through the human kingdom. And as we get to know what these are and who these are, including our previous incarnations, or some of them our previous lifetimes as human beings, we gain the knowledge we need in order to work with our microcosmic self. And this self-revelation is part of what you are beginning to work on with this initiation, and will continue much more intensely in other ways and in some of the other empowerments. Gautama Buddha, on the night that he sat under the Bodhi tree and gained self-knowledge, saw his previous lifetimes and incarnations. This is not something that you will see a lot of at this point, but you will be like putting the needle of a phonograph player down on a record, a little here and then lifting it and a little there, lifting it and a little there, and a pattern will emerge that you will be able to use, not just through this work, but through other kinds of work. And it's very important, this kind of self-knowledge is very important, to know where your affinities lie in the animal kingdom and in the mineral kingdom and in the vegetable kingdom. And these will become very important for you later on. Now, at the end of this sacred night, when you've gone through all the phases, you will end by leaving a gift in the earth. And if you are not able to be outdoors, it'll be a sacred place in the earth that you have access to. And you will bury your quartz, your clear quartz, at that place. Leave from now on the other stones that you have, and especially the sacred gemathii or gemathii, on your own personal altar, on your special place. You can continue to wear them if you wish and communicate with them. They're all very special tools for you now, including the goblet and the cup and other things that you've used. Everything you bring out with you from this vigil will have been consecrated in a very special way. don't worry if you don't have great revelations and visions, because it's the very little things you notice that, when we do the analysis, will open up for you what you really were in contact with. So let us know as soon as you've successfully completed this, and we will send you the analysis and we'll go from there. Tape of instruction for carrying out the initiatic vigil over the Easter or Paschal Passover moon period. It is best done on the evening immediately before, during, or after the full moon of Easter. The vigil creates a protected time and a sacred space for you to come into psychic and intuitional contact with very important information that you will analyze after completing the vigil. And so it's very important to note and record everything that you see, hear, or sense during the different phases of the vigil. And the easiest way to do this is with a tape recorder. After the vigil, you can write down and organize the information you've gathered for the vigil analysis, and then you will receive detailed directions for the vigil analysis with your WISOC First Empowerment Packet when that is sent to you by your request, having informed us that you've completed the vigil, and then you will have the information you need in order to do the analysis and to prepare for initiation itself. Now, you should have received this tape, a couple of sacred stones known as Gemathei or Gemathei, depending upon whether you use the medieval or the classic Latin pronunciation, and I use both sometimes, two sacred stones, and directions for carrying out the vigil. It's a little daunting to look at the directions at first, so you need to go over it and get to learn and understand what you're doing. Now, on this side of the tape, I will be introducing you to some of the more general concepts about the vigil and the kind of mantic work, that is the magical, theurgical, scraying work that we do in the initiatic vigil, and that you will be doing once you are initiated, when you come into the first empowerment and into the succeeding empowerments of the first order. On the other side of the tape, I will describe for you what you do with the Gemathei or the Gemathei and how you carry out the vigil. You will note that the vigil is intended to be done outdoors in nature, in a place where, preferably where you can see sunrise and sunset, a place where you will not be disturbed at all by anyone. And it is an all-night affair, and most of the night you are awake, although there is one place where you do some sleeping. However, there are many places in the world at this time where it's not feasible to be outdoors because of the weather or the climate or just your general location. And so it can be done and modified to be done indoors, and some specific directions are given for that, but you will need an outdoor place, an outdoor sacred place, in order to bury the quartz crystal that we will talk about later. So you do need at least one access to the outdoors, and if you do the vigil indoors, you need to be completely protected from intrusion, and the space that you use must not be space that anyone else has access to, and you must stay in that space and stay within your circle, except when necessity makes it not feasible to remain in the circle. If you have to go to the bathroom or something like that, then when you leave the circle, you take with you the sacred Gemathei or Gemathei, and you then return them. When you return to the circle, you return them to their central position. Now, there are very detailed things you need to learn about this. There's also some work you need to do with the Gemathei or the Gemathei before the vigil, and you need to find yourself some more minerals as well, one of which needs to be quartz. So this is all stuff that I will talk about on the other side of the tape. Now, it is vital that you bring no pre-existing interpretations or mental ideas into the vigil process, because they will simply color and misinform your results. And don't try to analyze what you are doing as you carry out the procedures or the operations of the vigil. Simply be present and alert for anything that you see, hear, or sense during the process. Now, this vigil employs techniques designed to assist you to gain certain knowledge that you will use for WISAC initiation and in the first empowerment, and to develop your microcosmic powers for later work in the Grail Temple. These techniques are a special series that are both shamanic and magical, a series of operations. And like many THG operations and empowerments, they're done with in special solar and lunar currents and under the protection of the egregor of the temple. Most of all, however, their success depends upon your perseverance and sincerity. Now, tradition and legend tell us that mantic, or magical or theurgical arts, and all other sacred sciences came to humanity through intermediaries who shared the secrets of heaven with mortals. Among the Egyptians, Isis and Thoth Hermes shared divine knowledge through the priesthood, and the divine sciences were offered freely by heaven. But among the Greeks and the Hebrews, the secrets of heaven became known to humans through the disobedience of gods or angels, gods like Prometheus, who was later punished by the gods for revealing fire and the noetic powers to humanity, or the fallen angels of the Enochian legend, the legends told in the Enoch literature, of the disobedient angels, the watchers, the ones who revealed the divine sciences and magic to humanity. So we must ask, are the divine sciences meant to be practiced by humans? In an ancient Hebrew and biblical tradition, all the divine sciences seem to be considered as witchcraft and evil and messing around with unnecessary forces and so on, and fallen angels. Whereas in other traditions, we find that they are considered to be high and holy gifts from heaven. So should we be doing this sort of thing? Well, the answer is no, not unless you are working on an initiatic path. These things can be done only properly by those who are properly guided on the paths of divine initiation. And that is what you are doing now. You are entering into this way. And so you are doing something that is taboo in the outer and the exoteric traditions of religion, but that constitute the great treasures of the esoteric and mystery aspects of religious and spiritual tradition. Now, the mantia, or divine sciences, are occult means of communicating and focusing power through the cooperation of lower and higher spiritual hierarchies. Temple of the Holy Grail transmits a new and unique mantic system that transcends the ancient and medieval methods, because the ancient and medieval hermetic sciences employed complex symbols and sigils, diagrams, names of supposedly fallen angelic hierarchies, astrological times, alchemical substances, and coercion of lower hierarchies by invocation of higher hierarchies to achieve various human goals, whether spiritual or merely personal, and very often they were merely personal. Now, we may study and make certain adaptations from these techniques and operations, rituals, and liturgies, but THG initiates do not rely upon them, and that is because, one, they often depend upon the wrong premise that divine power can be rightly channeled by the personality of an adept. Two, they often create subtle dangers that bring an adept into what has been called the path of devolution. And three, they are no longer appropriate for the more advanced human souls coming into incarnation. Our first order guides initiates through a series of seven empowerments. These awaken and organize and develop the latent microcosmic powers that have been demonstrated by great adepts. All seven first order empowerments can be safely developed only in the context of studies and apostolic ordination to the Grail priesthood through the home temple.
And they constitute all prerequisites for advancement into the second order Christ Melchizedek Tantra, which is a shamanic, theurgical, liturgical, magical, psychical, and intuitional means of empowerment for spiritual work, by which we mean healing, teaching, enhancement of professional or vocational service, divine communion, higher initiation, grail priesthood, and advancement in second order through generation and completion stages of this greatest of all tantras. In the traditions of patriarchal religions and cultures, the inner and the mystic traditions that evolve, that are not part of public religion or exoteric religion, are very often centered around a feminine aspect of deity. In ancient Kabbalistic tradition, God has two faces. The greater face is known as Makroprosopia, eternal light, love, and the benevolent source of all things which are good, whether human beings interpret them as good or evil. It has been compared to a transcendent divine father or begetter of the cosmos, unknowable through human perception, and is associated with the understanding of Godhead in outer, public, institutional, and exoteric forms of theistic religion. Now, the lesser face, or Mikroprosopia, might be best understood as the perceivable, and therefore immanent, presence of Godhead. This has been compared to a divine mother, and known in Western tradition as Chochma, or Sophia, wisdom, Ruach HaKodesh, Holy Spirit, Agathos, demon, and under the names of goddesses and world mothers. The lesser face is a kind of divine shadow reflection or impression that humanity perceives in accordance with its own highest vision. It's associated with the experience of Godhead through interior, initiatic, and esoteric mysteries of both theistic and non-theistic religions, such as Buddhism. It is the phenomenological aspect of spirituality, and all religions are rooted in original initiatic schools developed by their founders, who, like Moses, Gautama, Jesus, and Muhammad, were mystic initiates in close communion with Godhead. So we will call these two modalities Divine Father and Divine Mother. In ancient matriarchal religious traditions like that of Egypt, the Divine Mother was interpreted as a nurturing sky deity like Nut. But in patriarchal traditions of those like the Hebrews, the Divine Mother was understood as one who tests, tries, avenges, and initiates. In matriarchal tradition, heaven freely shares its treasures with humanity as a mother would her milk with a babe. But in patriarchal tradition, heaven jealously guards its secrets, and the only way human beings learn them is through divine betrayers like Prometheus and Azazel, who suffer eternally in divine retribution. These both allegorize, however, something more important. They allegorize the experience of an initiate who experiences both polarities of agony and ecstasy to a far greater degree than normal humanity. You see, the first part of initiatic growth requires seeking, painful self-examination, and various kinds of interior suffering. Yogic, ascetic, enkratitic, and monastic traditions of self-denial epitomize these pathways, but they also bring revelation, vision, and joy, which are the fruits of initiatic growth. The second part, and as it is said in the wisdom of Jesus ben Sirach, and I quote, "At first she," meaning wisdom or the Divine Mother, "will bring him," the initiate, "into tortuous paths until he has been tested and proven. Then straightway she will bring him joy and reveal her secrets unto him." This was part of the inner, interior tradition of the Jewish mystics, the Merkaba mystics, the throne mystics, and the early Kabbalistic mystics, that provided the context out of which much of what Jesus taught in early Christianity grew. Now, the Old Testament reflects nationalistic or exoteric aspects of ancient Hebrew religion, while the sacred writings of the Apocrypha and Pseudepigrapha of the Old Testament and other intertestamental and post-testamental literature from 400 years before the Christian era on forward usually reflect the mystic and esoteric aspects of Jewish and Christian religion, the apocalyptic aspects. Thus, Old Testament tradition warns against mediumship, for example, Samuel and the Witch of Endor, and occult sciences and that are given by the angels, who are later seen as fallen during this intertestamental period. The angels in Judaism fall. And against all goddesses and matriarchal practices, but the later Jewish literature develops psychic, apocalyptic, visionary, Merkaba, exorcistic, and other areas of the forbidden occult sciences of the angels. Emerging Christianity was rife with spiritualistic communications and practices. St. Paul tells of his Merkaba ascent to the third heaven, and many early church movements were led by Holy Spirit-possessed prophets who spoke in divine trance. Well, the Grail Temple is an initiatic school, not an institutional religion, and it is not Christian, but it draws upon the same phenomena as all esoteric tradition, but under the guidance and protection of the Master Jesus and the spiritual guides associated with the Western Grail traditions. And this is not to say that it is associated with the institutions of Christianity, because the Christian institutions parted company with the original impulses laid down by the Master Jesus and the Jewish Christians long, long ago, as it became a Gentile world religion. So, initiates in the Grail Temple are taught to work not by means of external spirit allies or magical coercion, but in, through, and by means of their own innate microcosmic powers. And there is much to learn of this as we progress. Heaven does indeed intend for humanity to become divine, just as a parent desires for a child to mature and become an adult co-worker and a peer. But the knowledge and responsibilities of adulthood must be earned through growth, self-discovery, and skillful practice. And therefore, the acquisition and use of divine sciences, which include all that we call science, as well as psychical, occult, and magical adeptship, are meant to come only to those who are spiritually ready. This readiness is a complex result of various growths, evolutions, and ripenings that occur in the psychic evolution of monadic activity in the human kingdom, resulting in development of a stable and harmonious incarnate Mahatma, or great soul. And only a human soul that synthesizes what we might call spiritual androgyny, the state of the angels, and is on the verge of divine hieros gamos, the highest of the mysteries. Only such a human soul that has developed this kind of readiness has also developed the ripeness and readiness for initiation into the work of an adept. Is it possible for human beings to use psychic and mantic sciences without being spiritually mature? Of course it is. Just as underage children can use a parent's gun or an automobile or can experiment with sex even before their pubic hair has grown. But in the case of magic and psychism, it is the rule rather than the exception that spiritually immature people are interested, attracted, and ultimately harmed by this kind of experimentation. In our current age, there are many fallen angels and lapsed initiates who pander occult knowledge to the general public. Bookstores sell for money what was once high initiatic knowledge and gnosis. And for this reason, the power of this knowledge has been withdrawn, and new forms of the mysteries are even now being generated and mediated to those of humanity who are ready. Those of you in THG and sister organizations are part of this great work as we enter into the 21st century. The bringing forth of the new spirituality of the new humanity. Yet this opening of the mysteries to the general public is, in fact, by higher design. Jesus said, "What has been whispered in your ears will one day be shouted from the housetops," and indeed it is now. Now, all this is by way of introduction to the mantic work of the vigil, which indeed is knowledge that was and has been and is transmitted by angels who communicate with humanity. And certain of the egregory stewards or so-called watchers of the Book of Enoch, chapter 6, for example, are said to have taken human wives and taught divine sciences to humanity. And in Hebrew tradition, this is in fact the reason that God finally destroys the earth in the great flood. And certain of these angels, who in later tradition had names like Sipsik, but in Enoch may be called Araqueal or Sarial, are said to have taught the arts of divining with air, earth, fire, and water, and with the pale reflection of the moon. Others taught astrology, metallurgy, and so forth. It was from the line of Cain that music and the arts is said to have come. But the occult history that these stories recount is not about human beings being initiated into evil taboo things by fallen angels. They are, in fact, distortions of the events that we now might interpret mythically and partially historically as the sinking of a once great earlier form of humanity associated with the concept of Atlantis, which sunk into the sea as a result of its abuse of divine sciences. The Atlanteans were supposed to be great adepts and workers of magic, etc. And this sinking of this civilization into the sea was not an act of God. No natural disasters are acts of God, but it was the natural result of the Atlantean abuse of their own relationship with elemental nature, an abuse that we are dangerously close to committing again. Humanity trips over its own feet and falls when it tries to reach the divine heights under the guidance of its lower personal intelligence and personality. Only by acting in submission to the higher nature can humanity rise and ascend. And that is the lesson of Atlantis and the fallen angels and the Old Testament and the fall of man and everything else that are told in these ancient legends. In Temple of the Holy Grail, you will operate in prayer and under higher guidance, and you will be safe and protected. In your initiatic vigil, you will perform kaomantia, or divination for self-knowledge, using air, earth, fire, water, and the pale reflection of the moon on your vigil. Isn't this forbidden knowledge, again, going back to the Old Testament? Well, scraying and the mantic arts are not forbidden to those in temple training, and they are not forbidden to those in initiatic training. They are, in fact, holy and sacred arts, and your practice of them is not only sanctioned, but invisibly guided by heaven. Humanity was not ripe for this kind of knowledge in the Enochian literature, and yet it came to them. Is this because God made a mistake? Was God not really in control of creation? I don't think so. If the angels fell and shared divine knowledge with humanity, it was God's doing. Be certain about that. If Eve tempted Adam to eat of the tree of knowledge of good and evil, it was God's doing. You can be certain about that. And if it was not merely that God moved the serpent to test Eve, God was the serpent. You will be guided in your mantic work for the vigil, not by fallen angels, but by the higher and evolutionary forces within yourself, and what you will receive will be true and of great value, and we will help you to understand it and interpret it, and it will form a solid basis for the next stages of initiation. If people were to try to do this work outside of the egregor of the temple and the protection of the temple and of those who are authorized to use this, it could be not only illusory, it could even be dangerous. And if someone were to find these lessons and try to apply them without the deep basis of the temple and certain other structures and designated things, they could invite possibly serious consequences, like obsession. And so that is why I tell you that these documents must not be shared with other people. They are initiatic documents, even though you're not initiated yet, and they must be kept secret. Now, you will vigil from sunset to sunrise. Most of the time, you will be awake doing certain kinds of operations. These will include scraying or scrying, which means
looking, not just with your eyes, but with the eye, the single eye, between your eyes, the eye that sees when your physical eyes are closed. You will be looking into the air with lunar water. You'll be scrying into a candle flame, scrying the element of fire. And you will be inquiring of the Arcades with Earth. And the Arcades are the most intelligent, are the most developed and the most evolved aspect of the mineral kingdom, the crystalline kingdom. You will become in communion, in close communion, in an intuitive way with what has been called the Holy Guardian Angel through the Augoides. You will be in communion with your highest nature or your higher nature. You will scray into the mirror by fire using an ancient technique to look into faces and things that will tell you some things about yourself. You will do a face of the master practice. And then you will go to sleep for a while and perform an operation we know as Erodinia, a sacred dreaming. Then you will awaken for an Iliaster meditation, first a pre-dawn vigil in which you will make more observations, and finally a sunrise Iliaster meditation. And then you will end what you've done with special rites and rituals, and you will, so to speak, dissolve the mandala of the work that you have done and that you have created that evening. This work is not so far away from the work done by shamans or American Indians when they went out on the mountain to cry for a vision, for guidance and for a vision. And they went by themselves and they marked the four directions and they made a sacred space in which they stayed and they made certain prayers and then they made observations of everything they saw, what direction, what kind of bird flew from, what kind of creature crawled upon their feet and upon their shoes, at what time of day this occurred, different things like this. And then this would be taken back to the wise shaman and in the circle of the pipe, the sacred pipe. They would all sit together and they would analyze what had been told and revealed to this person through this sacred vigil, which might last for several days. We don't do it quite that way, but this is still an archetypal pattern. It's a shamanic pattern, and it is one that has been done from time immemorial with those who seek to make that higher connection with their own higher nature and with the higher realities within the realities and the realities that substand and that superstand the realities we understand in the world. So this is a very important thing for you to do, and it's very important for you to gather information. Every thought, every feeling, every image that fleetingly comes to you, note it when it happens, because you will not remember it later. It'll be so fresh and so vivid to you at the time, but if you don't note it and you don't jot it down, you will lose it. So it is very important. Keep a good record of all the impressions that come to you as you do each of these things and as you face each of the four directions and as you call upon and invoke the kind of knowledge that you're trying to gain. Notice tastes and smells and colors and senses of any sort. Note them down. And then when you've completed this and informed us of that, we will send you the analysis for the vigil and all the material you need to do in order to go through the initiation. I'm going to begin the second side of this tape with a lecture I gave 10 years ago about the meaning and the use of the Gemathei or the Gemathei, after which I will describe more in detail about how you carry out the vigil.